This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
9:03 on this Saturday morning. Time now for Sports Saturday, brought to you by Prairie Farms Dairy in Carlinville. Taste the homemade goodness of Prairie Farms. Mark Steeren, your State Farm Insurance agent in Litchfield. By Hillsboro Area Hospital. Kurtz 24-hour heavy and light duty towing in Litchfield. Bruce Webb Insurance in Farmersville and Raymond. By DC Waste and Recycling. And by Garrell's Auto Body and Repair in Litchfield. And on this Saturday morning, we join WSMI's Tim Mize and Terry Tote.
David Jenkins, thank you very much. Welcome to Sports Saturday here on the 21st day of July. And we got a Cards-Cubs doubleheader today.
Hey, how about that? A day night doubleheader. The first game starts, about 12:30 this afternoon? I don't know.
11:10 pregame.
11:10 pregame? Okay.
So what's that, 12:15 first pitch?
Something like that, yeah. Okay.
AM 1540 FM 106.9, then game two tonight, 6:05 on AM 1540 and 106.9.
Matt Carpenter had, a whole month's worth of stats last night, or yesterday afternoon.
Think about how long the game of baseball has been played, how long the Cardinals franchise has been around, and how great the franchise has been over the year. And he set record after record yesterday. The 21st career leadoff home run, that ties Lou Brock's franchise record. The 3 home runs and 2 doubles, that's the first time that's ever been done before the 7th inning.
Wow.
5 extra base hits before the 7th inning had never been done in the history of baseball. The 3 homer, 2 double game, it's only the second time it's ever been done in the history of baseball. And I like this one. He's the first Cardinals leadoff batter since 1945 to drive in 7.
Wow.
Augie Bergamo. I don't know if that's how you pronounce it. I've never even heard of the guy.
Yeah.
1945.
Had like 16 total bases yesterday.
16 total bases. That ties Mark Whitten.
Yeah.
Remember his four
home run
game in Cincinnati?
Yeah.
Took him 9 innings to do that, though.
Yeah.
Carp did it in a mere 6. And then, what was it? The 11th player in the last 110 years to have 5 extra base hits. The first player to ever do it from the leadoff spot.
How about that? That's amazing.
History.
That's amazing.
History.
And if baseball is, normal, he could go 0-6 today. I mean, that's just the world of baseball,
It has this way of evening out.
It does. It really does. But, of course, Carpenter's been on fire since, about
May
halfway
15th.
Through May.
Middle of May. Yeah.
And put him back in the leadoff spot, and things just started clicking. I don't know if he got healthy again or if he was just seeing the ball better, but
he got dropped down to 7th in the order is what happened.
Yeah.
So he got dropped down, and then that's
didn't like that, did he?
Right, and that's when he started taking off.
Baseball players have always said it doesn't matter where I hit in the lineup. Well, for Carpenter, it seems to matter very much. You put him in the leadoff spot, and this dude just morphs into a completely different type of player.
Yeah. And the Cardinals have been batting Molina second.
With that?
How about that?
The new manager, which, thank goodness for that.
This is our first time talking about it.
It is.
Mike Schilt has said, Yadi's our best hitter.
Yeah.
I want our best hitters hitting up in the order. And, the only thing that concerns you about Yadi hitting second is he's just so slow.
Yeah.
He's just so slow. But, hey, he's as clutch comes.
But if Carpenter's hitting doubles, it doesn't really matter because he's not hitting.
Well, my concern would more be if the third place hitter hits a double.
Yeah.
Can Yadi score?
Yeah.
That's the only issue, but that's really neither here nor there.
And the smart thing about Molina is if you've got Carpenter on second base with a leadoff double, Molina will give himself up and hit the ball to the right side in order to get him to third base with less than 2 outs.
Mm-hmm.
And, not many Cardinal players can do that. In fact, I get frustrated watching them not doing it. They're all trying to hit the ball out of the ballpark, and sometimes you just need to put the ball in play, and sometimes it'll go through for a base hit.
That's exactly right.
Not many major leaguers can hit it to the opposite field anymore.
It's kind of the way the game
kind of a lost art
has trended. Yep. But the thing that I like, I like many things about Mike Matheny no longer being there, but Mike Schilt has already, just 3 games in, has the ability to explain himself and the decisions that he's making. Like, he's hitting Colton Wong 6th, not because of some sort of gut feeling or because he wants to because he likes the guy or hitting somebody 8th because he doesn't like the guy. He said, I like a left-handed batter there. I like somebody with speed there. Mm-hmm. And I like just an overall rounded baseball player there.
Yeah.
Logic and reason. Imagine what a crazy concept.
Explanation.
We got so used to Tony La Russa over the years, whether you agreed with him or disagreed
right.
with him. When he got done telling you why he did something, you said,
okay,
well, that makes a lot of sense. You have thought about this. Over the last 7 years, the manager never had a reason. He would get defensive. He would get testy. How dare you question me? Well, yeah, they're going to question you. Yeah. That's how it works. And just 3 games in, and 3 games is not an overhaul make.
No.
But they just seem different.
Yeah.
Going all the way back to when Mike Matheny was hired, and they first hired John Mabry as a hitting coach. And I remember sitting on this show going, why in the world would you hire John Mabry as a hitting coach? Because John Mabry was not that good of a hitter.
And besides the shoddy defense and the bad base running, which will get shored up with the new direction now, the biggest frustration and what made the Cardinals so unbearable the last 3 years was the lack of hard contact and just weak ground balls that they consistently
roll over and pull the ball to the shortstop
all the time.
You know,
3 games now with Mabry out, they are hitting balls hard. Mm-hmm. But that game Thursday, they lost, but
they
scored 6 runs and hit so many balls right on the screws that were right at defenders. And then yesterday, I mean, obviously, they just crushed baseball after baseball. Hard contact is all you want.
And yesterday's game, you kind of have to put aside because blowout, it's a blowout, you know, and those happen on a rare occasion. But still, like you said, Tim, they seem to be a little more focused on crushing the baseball just a little bit different attitude about it.
They just seem different.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. You
can't really catch a ball, but
still
you know.
Do that.
Yeah.
But you can't undo all the bad habits in a week.
No.
You know, that's going to take time.
And it's going to take time. It's going to take trades. It's going to take, you know, moving some people. And that's the second part of the situation as far as the Cardinals are concerned. They're going to need to move some people. And they may need to move some people who are very high quality in order to get some people that they need, you know. So
it's going to be very interesting, though, to see what the current group of everyday players does now. We've already seen a more consistent lineup, which that had been a bit of an issue because there was no rhyme or reason for the decisions that were being made prior. Now you just
kind of like flip a coin. Okay, heads, I'll be in right field tonight.
That's what it seemed like a lot of the time. So we'll see if they can play consistent baseball here.
The one person I'd like to see in there, and that's only because he tweaked his ankle the other day, Harrison Bader. Mm-hmm. Boy, I love seeing Bader out there in the field and even at the plate. That guy is just, he's got a spark about him, and he just hustles his rear end off.
He's statistically one of the best defensive outfielders in all of baseball.
Yeah. You know, the thing of it is, he's not afraid to go after the ball.
Yeah.
Right. And that's so much of playing high-quality defense is you have to just react and go.
Go.
If the minute you think, should I go for that ball, it's too late.
Yeah.
You have to just instinctually do it.
Mm-hmm. And, he has made a lot of terrific plays in his short career. And, has had some big hits as well. And boy, does that guy, he just... You know, he's always at full speed, it seems like.
He's going to play today, that's for sure.
Yeah.
If he's healthy.
Right.
Well, he's probably going to play today.
Hope so.
Yeah.
Hope so. I think it was, I don't know if it was his knee or his ankle, whatever.
It was his hyperextended knee.
Was it a knee? Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
No, hyperextended knee.
I think it was hyperextension.
Yeah, but he's like, 22? He'll be fine.
Wrap it up. Put a Bengay on it. Wrap it up.
We hyperextended. They're rolling us out.
Yeah.
It's over. All over. What I hope, though, and I think the biggest difference with Schilt in there instead of the previous guy, is accountability. There had been no accountability for a long, long time. You could run into outs, you're fine. Make an error, you're fine. Mistakes are still going to happen in the game of baseball.
Sure.
That's just life. That's just how it goes. But are you held accountable for the mistakes? And I think that will be the biggest difference moving forward is that it's no longer going to just be pat you on the back. It's okay that you were tagged out by 20 feet. Yeah. You'll get them next time, by golly.
You got picked off.
Oh.
Well, and that Mike Schilt is a George Kissel disciple, so a lot of that accountability is likely to come back.
Yes. Yeah. And maybe we can get back to what the Cardinal way was supposed to be. It was never a complicated thing. It was never about how you lived your life,
yeah,
or if it was a family atmosphere in the clubhouse. That's what the previous guy made it.
Yeah.
All it was is fundamental baseball.
Yeah.
That's all it ever was.
Yeah, and Tim, I can't remember if you ever mentioned it on the air or not, but you had a connection or a source who was connected to a certain coach with the Cardinals about how the culture actually was.
Yeah, like, and behind the scenes. It's what everybody thought, that you could get tagged out by 15 feet, and the manager would say, it's okay. You get him. You get him next time.
Yeah.
It's okay. We like the aggressiveness. Like, no. No.
We pay you to stay on base.
No.
And score.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes. Like, it's not a complicated
yeah.
game.
Yeah.
You catch the ball.
And yes, people are going to get picked off once in a while. But when you do it as much as the Cardinals have done it, it just drives you insane.
They just ran until they got tagged out, and then they would just tip their cap. Well, he made a good throw. Yeah, that's because he's a major league right fielder.
Yep.
He can make a throw from right field to third base or to home.
Yeah.
So, we'll see. But I think the arrow is trending up. Now, whether they actually have enough time to make the playoffs, don't really know. I honestly don't really care.
Yeah.
Just play quality, sound baseball the rest of the year.
And I still think there has to be some wheeling and dealing going on with the Cardinals. And, of course, a lot of that may come here in the next 2 to 3 weeks, whether the Cardinals are going to be contenders or pretenders. So.
Well, it would be hard for me to believe the Cardinals will do nothing at the trade deadline 2 years in a row. Remember, they didn't do anything last year. So for them, it would be uncharacteristic for them to do nothing 2 years in a row.
The last three games here against the Cubs, the next three against Cincinnati, and then the three home games against the Cubs. That will tell the Cardinals exactly what they need to do and where they are.
Yeah.
We'll have when we're sitting here a week from today, we'll know exactly what the Cardinals' outcome is.
Don't they have
the
Brewers before the end of the month, too? Or am I
the Brewers are in there in the mix somewhere down late in the month, going into August, I think. So.
Yeah.
First things first, sweep the doubleheader today. Just ho-hum, sweep that doubleheader.
Is that all?
That's all you got to do.
Is that all you got to do?
Yeah, that's all you got to do. Not that hard. 11:05. Check that 11:10 this morning, then 6:05 tonight. Both games from Wrigley Field, AM 1540 and FM 106.9. We need to get to a break on Sports Saturday. On the other side, Terry, we're going to have our good buddy Dave Kane join us.
And we'll talk to Dave about maybe some of the new coaching coaches in high school football around
the area.
Interested
to get Dave's thoughts on the potential of districts as
in
well.
In districts as well, absolutely. That's coming up after these messages.
Back to Sports Saturday here on WSMI, and we rejoin Tim Mize and Terry Tote.
All right, David Jenkins, thank you so much. Back here on WSMI Sports Saturday, going to catch up with Dave Kane in just one moment, but Terry, I was telling you during the break, Tiger has himself at 3 under par at the Open Championship, just 3 strokes off the lead.
PGA needs Tiger to be Tiger again to bring a little attention to the world of professional golf and give these youngsters kind of a taste of, golf took a huge leap when Tiger came to the professional level. And the pressure that these the rest of the golfers were under. It'd be great to see him return to his old form. And
well, he elevated the whole sport.
Oh, he did.
Before Tiger came around, like the old Craig Stathers of the world, you could just be not in the best of shape. Just kind of go out there and plod around. Tiger showed up. He's working out. He's doing military training. It forced the rest of the sport to get up to his level. So all these young guys now, you see them. They're all ripped and cut and in fantastic shape. That's because of Tiger.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, that's how it's done.
He changed the condition of the game and the conditioning of the players.
Absolutely.
And you just don't shoot scores like Tiger used to shoot if you weren't in, excellent shape, both physically and mentally. So let's hope the best for Tiger.
Absolutely. We'll keep our eye on that here as the day unfolds. We're going to switch gears now. Happy to be joined on the phone by our good buddy Dave Kane of the Springfield State Journal Register. And good morning, Dave.
Hi, guys. How's it going?
Hey, we're doing pretty well here. And, well, we're just a few weeks away from Football Friday, so I would imagine, just like we are, you're getting excited.
Oh, yeah. It seems like, I think, the older, as Terry will, I'm sure, vouch for this, it seems like the older you get, the faster the years pass, yes, and certain months in particular pass. I think July has really zipped by. I think maybe it's because especially football, but other fall sports are just a few weeks away. And, it's hard to believe. And, we had, an exciting season in our area, last year, the South Central Conference, the Sangamo Conference, everything else. And I'm sure it's going to be another, exciting year, coming up.
Well, between Staunton, Carlinville, Williamsville, and Pleasant Plains, that is a consistent run of state championship game appearances.
Yeah, it's really hard to believe.
And Auburn.
Auburn.
Yeah. And, of course, Rochester is, I know they're 4A, of course, and Rochester's, you can almost just write them
in pen.
To make the title game. And I think anytime they've made the title game, they've won it. Last year was on a last second field goal, but in the last five or six years, between the Sangamo Conference and the South Central Conference, we've been pretty well represented, either DeKalb or Champaign.
IHSA has not quite got to the point yet of where they just type Rochester in on the brackets, but, it's getting close.
it's going on right now, this dynasty, this whatever. And, you'd have to think sooner or later it's going to, I don't want to say end, but maybe, they might miss the title game a year or two.
Yeah.
And, maybe years from now when Rochester, maybe they're not quite the dynasty they are right now, and you'll look back and it'll even seem bigger than it is now, but it's awfully big right now what Derek Leonard has done. I think that their program didn't start till about 1995 or 96.
And by the way, Dave, I broadcast the first Rochester game. It was Litchfield at Rochester. First game ever for Rochester
and
High School.
I think, didn't Rochester win that game?
Yes, they did.
I think that their very, very first year they played a JV schedule, but then they played varsity games.
Yeah.
And I think that first year they actually won, two of their first three or three of their first four. And if there's a gentleman from Rochester named Steve Taft, I don't know if you know him at all, but Steve was very involved in getting the football program started, talking to the school board and everything else. And after they had won like that third game, him and a buddy were at a watering hole or a restaurant or something. And one of them said, "What do you bet somebody's going to come in here and say, how many games do you got to win to make the playoffs?"
Yeah.
And sure as heck, if that happened, you got to win a few more games. And Rochester, unfortunately, did not win another game the rest of that season and the following season. And it took a while for them to get back on track. David Jacobs coached them for a long time and did a nice job. And then Derek Leonard and the rest is history.
If memory serves me right, Dave, in the early days, the first year or two, Rochester ran into some injuries of key players too, and that really hurt, set the program back. Yeah.
And they didn't have nearly as much depth.
Sure. Yeah.
It was still a new program, even though it was a growing school district. The depth, wasn't obviously not what it is now. And, they were learning how to win. And Derek Leonard, when he first came there, the first few years, they became very, very, a very good offensive team. But it took several years for the defense to catch up to the offense, because I remember they would come back from some road game Rochester would lose like 54-48 or something. They just couldn't, they could.
Yeah.
But once the defense, really got on board, and boy, they were really off and running. So yeah, it's pretty amazing.
And Dave, sometimes even at the high school level, Greenville had a great run a number of years ago, Rochester in the middle of one. Sometimes it's easy to not necessarily appreciate the greatness at the time that it's happening.
Mm-hmm. I think I kind of mentioned that a while ago. I think we all acknowledge and realize this is really you know, I mean, for any school, let alone a public school. You know, you right. have some Catholic schools like the Joliet Catholics, and when Addison Driscoll was still open, who would reel off five or six, you know, state championships in a row. But just, boy, for a public school to do this, it's amazing. But like you said, I think, you know, maybe years from now, if Derek Leonard ever retires or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, I think you'll be able to maybe try to appreciate it even more. It's pretty cool right now.
And as broadcasters and sports writers and even as parents with kids playing and fans of this, you know, the tournaments run so quick. That sometimes you just don't have time to appreciate it. It's, you know, you're busy talking about, okay, where are they going to play next week? You know, what time we're going to leave? Yeah. We're talking about broadcast schedules. You're talking about, you know, who you're going to assign to go cover the thing that night. And sometimes you get so caught up in the logistics of doing your job that mm-hmm. you just don't sit there and are not able to enjoy everything. And then you look back and go, God, that went quick.
Yeah, because guys went quick, and then, you know, the players, you know, it flies by for them, and then maybe they get together at reunions 10 and 20 years afterwards, and gosh, remember when that happened? And yeah, you know, but at the time, like you said, it flies by so much that it's a whirlwind, that's for sure.
Dave Kane joining us here on Sports Saturday, and Dave, obviously, I guess the big news around high school football is the potential change of moving to districts. I guess the question would be, what are you hearing from the people you've talked to about the possibility of this happening and just your overall thoughts on the potential big change?
Well, you know, I get kind of mixed mixed reactions from coaches and whatnot. I know you've done interviews and stuff about it. The main gist behind this idea is, in recent years, conferences, you know, some conferences have been fairly stable, but you see other conferences where, you know, teams, they say conference jumping, you know, where, boy, this conference looks kind of shaky. We better look for something else so we'll be able to get in enough games and be playoff eligible and things like that. And from that standpoint, I think it makes sense. I think it makes sense. I mean, I'm kind of a traditionalist. I would, you know, part of me would hate to see, you know, the tradition of conferences and conference championships go by the wayside. But just, you know, times have changed a lot where, you know, between, you know, conference jumping and you have more co-ops and, you know, like this year, you know, or last year, Matt Olive and Bunker Hill went together. So suddenly the Prairie State Conference was down a team, what do we do? And I think I lose track now. I think they've added a couple teams since then, but it's just like a domino effect every year, between conferences and co-ops and things like that. And I don't think this district concept is going to maybe solve all the problems, but, you know, the ISSA is going to take care of it now. And this is going to be your geographic district, and you're going to play, you know, X number of the same teams in your district, and then talking about right now is that you'll be allowed maybe one rivalry game or something, you know, maybe a team that you wouldn't play otherwise, which I think is good. Invariably, there'll be some teams that wish that they could play.
Yeah.
You know, they have two or three rivals that they wish they could play, and that might not work out. But, you know, I know Missouri has had a sort of a district-type system for a number of years. And I believe Indiana, Indiana does also. I think Illinois is kind of not the hole in the donut, but we're the meat in the sandwich here. We're kind of in between where a lot of nearby states, you know, have districts. You know, the one thing, I guess I'm not totally clear as far as when, if a season would have to start earlier. Because, you know, in effect, everyone would kind of make the playoffs, I think. I could be wrong.
No, I think, Dave, the way that I understood it is the playoff format would stay the exact same. It would still be 256 teams with the classes.
Okay.
But you would have, it would still be a 9-week season. And then depending on if you were in a 7-team or an 8-team district, you would either have one or two non-district games, which wouldn't affect.
Just depending on,
Right, and that wouldn't affect the playoffs. So your non-district games wouldn't affect the playoffs. And I'm like you, I'm a traditionalist. So when I first heard about the district, I'm like, I don't know. But once I realized that the playoffs were going to stay the same, I suddenly think it's a very good idea. Because the football playoffs, it's a beautiful system, the way they have it set up. It is great.
Plus, one thing that would happen, you would know at the start of the season which class you would be in.
That would be nice.
Yeah.
That's true. Because, you know, among other things, during the regular season, the Associated Press, they have, you know, polls for each class, and that's based on, you know, they just take every football playing school in the state and then they split it up into eight equal things. But then you do have those schools from, from 1 year to the next that kind of jump back and forth. And a lot of people don't understand, well, hey, we were ranked in 2A during the regular season. Now we're 1A. Why is that? So, I mean, you know, even little things like that, it might eliminate some confusion a little bit. So, yeah, and I guess I was thinking more about, you know, Indiana, Missouri, because I know they start their seasons a week earlier because I think it's, in effect, everybody does get in the playoffs, so they have to allow for, like, an extra round. And now that you mentioned that is right. And that's, yes, I think that is a very good aspect of it, where you still have to earn your way in. And I know the so-called old-timers, when playoffs started in the 70s, you really had to earn your way in back then. You had to win a conference and whatever. But even now, you feel like you've accomplished something if you've made the playoffs, even if it's with five wins. So yeah, you're right. From that standpoint, this is a significant change, but the fact that they're kind of keeping that aspect of the playoffs, that's a good thing.
Dave, what's your gut tell you? Is this going to happen? What do you think?
I personally think it's going to happen. I guess it's more of a downstate perspective, but where we, you know, I guess up in the Chicago area or up north, you know, I mean, you still see teams jumping around conferences up there, but especially downstate with smaller schools, it seems like it's more in a state of flux from year to year, where you have co-ops and things like that, where it can kind of cause, you know, teams to, you know, a conference either can either lose a team or a team switches conferences. It just seems like it's gotten to be such a yearly thing now where, okay, oh, they're in that conference this year. I personally think it's going to happen. I think this has to be approved by the, I think it has to be approved by the membership,
correct,
though, by the IHSA membership. I mean, this isn't just a football advisory committee and then board of directors thing. If I understood it correctly, I thought it had to be approved by, you know, by the statewide membership.
Yeah, it'll go to a vote.
I might be wrong.
No, you're right.
Athletic directors, principals, whoever the official representative from a school district is. Yeah.
And, Dave, I thought one of the other neat things was that with the non-district game, you'll be able to schedule anybody you want and not have to worry about it affecting your playoff status. So, like Carlinville, for example, they could go out and they could schedule a really high-level opponent just to get kind of playoff ready and not have to worry about it affecting their playoff status. Because some of these schools, we saw with SHG last year, when you get into a locked conference, sometimes that can hurt you when you get into the playoffs because you don't see that type of style of play.
No, you're right. Style of play or just, you know, level of play.
Yeah, level of play more than anything, yeah.
But you're right. You make a very good point. You know, I remember, oh gosh, I don't know how many years ago it was, you know, they've always tinkered with the playoff system, but they had that thing for a while where they averaged your classification, your enrollment figure would be either your own enrollment or the average of your opponent's enrollment, you know, and then early on, I think before they did that, it was the average enrollment of your opponent or something.
Well, early on, it was each conference was assigned a class. And all the teams in the conference were in that class. So, you know, back in the early days, that's how they used to do it. So,
well, yeah, and I think before they went to the thing of the average, and at some point they would throw out the largest and the smallest or whatever, but there was a year, I think about 1991, I don't know if you remember this, Greenfield, and it was the only year they ever made it to a state title game, and they were clearly a 1A school. They played in the WIBC. But they played Southwestern in a non-conference game at the end of the season. And Southwestern was quite a bit bigger. And at that time, they included all of your opponent's enrollments. And that kicked Greenfield up to 2A. And ironically, that's the only time they ever made a state title game. I think they lost, but yeah, just all over the years, I know that, you know, give the IHSA credit, they've tried to, you know, if coaches have said, hey, why don't you try this? I mean, they've tried different things, but obviously this potential district thing would be, you know, the most significant change ever, but like, as Tim pointed out, fortunately, they would keep the essence of playoffs the same, where you still have to earn your way in. So I personally, I think it's going to happen. I think it might not be for, yeah, obviously not this year, and I don't know if it'll even be next season, but I think
with, I say within 3 years we're going to see it. Yeah,
I think it's going to happen. Yeah. I think between that and maybe they keep talking about the shot clock in high school basketball. I don't know what's going to happen first, but yeah, we got some changes on the horizon, I think.
Problem with the shot clock, though, is the fact that, you know, some schools can't afford to put it in.
Yeah, either put it in or you have to have maybe, I don't know if you have to have an additional person,
yeah,
you know, running the shot. It was like for track meets, you know, at least for IHSA postseason stuff, you have to have what they call fully automatic timing. So you have to have that system. You have to have people who know how to do it. And, you know, so, hey, we're going to do this. Well, sometimes that stuff's easier said than done. So yeah, you're right. There's a cost factor there. That's for sure.
The shot clock sounds better in theory than reality for high school basketball.
Yeah. High school basketball, it ain't broke, don't fix it. Okay, but that's just
I agree. And I think another thing they've agreed on for this coming season for basketball is, I think, right, they've gone. They're going to go back to having a running clock. Like in the fourth quarter, if it's a 30-point lead?
I think it's
something
30.
Like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think it's just for regular season. And I think they tried that several years ago, and for some reason they discontinued it after 1 year. And I think it's tough if you put subs in and you got a running clock, it's like, you know, got to get the subs in so they can get a few minutes, and it fly, you know, it flew by.
Yeah, the game.
So I don't
fast.
Know if they're going to make any adjustments with it or not, but yeah, that could be another change on the horizon.
And that was always weird, Dave, too, when the game would end with someone at the free throw line thinking, is he going to get the free throw off before the clock stops?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it seems like, and I can't remember if they, maybe in a situation like that, if it was the last minute or something, maybe they would stop the clock. To let in a free throw situation. I can't remember. I just remember there was a postseason game that year when they had done it during the regular season, but they didn't do it in the postseason. North Green had one of the really good teams. They had a great player named Sean Knox. He was a great scorer.
Yeah.
They were playing Nokomis in a sectional game at Carlinville, and Nokomis put the clamps down with the zone press, and they just suffocated Sean Knox, and Nokomis was running away with it, and they got a big lead at some point in the fourth quarter, and they came out of a timeout, and they just started running the clock, and they weren't supposed to do it in the postseason. And Marty Rhodes, you know, he knew that the game was out of hand, but Marty Rhodes, the North Korean coach, said, hey, what are you doing? You know, and it was kind of like, oops, sorry about that.
Yeah.
So, that'll be... I don't know. I don't know for sure if that'll happen this year or not.
The only bad thing about that is basketball doesn't last that long, you know. And you're right. And a running clock for 8 minutes in the fourth quarter, I mean, that thing flies by. And to me, you know, if you're going to get kids in, stopping the clock on violations and stuff is no big deal. Yeah. It doesn't last that much longer. So,
yeah.
But that's just my personal opinion. Football, you know, the quarters are longer. That can get drawn out to three and a half hours.
Oh, I mean, yeah. I mean, yeah. If teams are passing a lot or whatever, it can take forever. So, yeah, we need a good old fashioned Andy Easton against Don DeBrino.
There you go.
Get out of there in about an hour and a half.
I like it, Dave. You mentioned Steve Kimbrough a minute ago, and who knows how much longer Steve's going to do it, but. The program that has been established under his watch at Nokomis is really one of the great runs of small schools in the history of the state.
Oh yeah, there's no question, and you know it's kind of neat among the many aspects of that, the fact that Steve and Neil Alexander grew up together in Fillmore, and they went to Nokomis High School together, and now they've gone on to each. I can't remember. I know I know Neil is over 700 wins, I think. I lose track, but 700 or 800. I know Steve is just a little bit behind Neil.
They're over 700, think, yeah.
Yeah, they're okay, yeah. So, but it's just, it's that part of it alone is remarkable. But yeah, that I think Nokomis, his teams, his Boise's have not had a losing season in forever. I think 1 year within the last 20, they had an extreme, and Terry, you probably remember, they had an extremely young team.
Yeah.
And they really got off to a slow start. And they finally, I think they finally got like a, maybe a game over 500. They
about,
won a regional game or
about 500 they finished 1 year. But
yeah, and I think they lost their next postseason game, so they finished 500. But
yeah.
But even then, I think it's any program like that, the kids know, hey, we have a tradition to uphold here. We don't want to be the ones who drop the ball or, you know, we don't want to be the ones that had a losing season or whatever. I mean, there's a lot of pride there, and the alumni come back, and you know, there's a just, you know, there's a little personal pride at stake there.
You get a Nokomis team to the sectional basketball tournament, and you got a crowd.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this past year where they went up to Central A&M,
yeah.
And of course it was at Central A&M, and truthfully, you know, that was a sectional. That gym was almost too small for a sectional,
yeah.
Given the turnout. I mean, I walked in there like an hour before the game, and it was standing room only. It was just absolutely jam-packed.
I thought we were going to have to throw HUD out just to make room for everybody else. So.
Yeah, I'm sure he would have been fine with that. No, there was so much red, there was so much red and black in that gym tonight, because that's both of their school colors. So, but yeah, anytime. I mean, there's just so many great memories. And I think you brought it up a week or two ago, Terry. I think it was in 96 in the old gym at Nokomis, that the game against Shelbyville.
That game.
I think that people, you know, when you do something like this for years and years, feel, what's the best game you ever covered? And even though Nokomis came out on the short end, that is still about the most memorable game I can remember, because I think Shelbyville was ranked first in the state. Yeah. And I think Nokomis, they had a post player. He was injured. I remember he went out and he shot in the three-point thing, and he was kind of hobbling around. They gave him a standing ovation, but he couldn't play. And Nokomis hung with him, and I think it went into overtime, and Nokomis kind of had him on the ropes. And then Shelbyville, they pulled it out at the end. I think a guy named Roger Jones made a shot for Shelbyville. But Nokomis, that game always. Because I remember Mike Rivera in the locker room afterwards saying, boy, we had him.
Yeah.
And then they did get him the next year. They went over to Shelbyville and won the regional. So
that's where the four-class system has kind of changed things. Because how many state championships would Nokomis have if there was a four-class system the last 25, 30 years?
Oh, yeah, you wonder. Yeah, you wonder. And, you know, Lincolnwood back in the day, Terry, you know this. And I'm from up here in Springfield. I went to Southeast High School. I wasn't in high school yet, but that Lincolnwood team in 71, they came up to the Armory, and I think they knocked off Southeast. They beat Griffin. I think they finally lost
to Lampier, who finished fourth that year
in the regional
state.
Title game.
Yeah.
But, you know, a lot of folks in the Panhandle, you know, the following year they made it to Champaign, the first year of two classes. They got third place. But a lot of folks around there, you know, will say, hey, that 72 team was great, but that 71 team was, you know, maybe even better, but it was single class, you know.
65
so
team
after
was.
After Nokomis fans have memories like that.
65 team was probably the best, but that 71 team when you had the Langen twins and Truby and Selback and Hobson and that 71 team, man, those guys could play ball. Oh my gosh, they could play ball.
Yeah,
quick, up and down the floor. So
Southeast, I think it was an overtime game. It was like a first-round regional game, and Southeast thought, oh, you know, Raymond Lincolnwood, you know, because Southeast had only lost a couple. That was one of their first really good teams. Southeast opened in 67, and, you know, they kind of had a little swagger, and they played in the Armory in the city tournament and all that, and they got a rude awakening that night, so
and
it goes.
And playing in the Armory was a whole different experience because, you know, back in the early days when it was, you know, Raymond High School, Farmersville High School, you had to go through the districts. But as Lincolnwood, you know, you got into the regional, and you got right into the playing in the Armory. And I can remember standing outside freezing my rear end off, standing in line for tickets to get into the Armory. And you know, just great, great memories.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. The armory is pretty much empty now, and it's not really in use. I still drive there almost every day, and I always, there's just a lot of memories there, you know, and kids now, where's the armory? They'd never heard of that. So a lot of memories, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Dave Cannon, the Springfield State Journal Register, thank you so much for joining us this morning on the show, Dave. And before we know it, we'll be talking football, we'll be talking volleyball, soccer. It's right around the corner.
Yeah.
It is. I'll just, you try to enjoy the rest of this month and maybe a little bit of August, and then away we go.
Yeah, but it's time. I'm ready for it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we don't got to go back to school, so we're ready for
that's
it.
That's right, yeah, you know.
Well, and the fact that Terry is ready, that is super. Yeah. And I wanted to say it's great to hear you back on the air.
Thank you, my friend.
It's okay.
So you're a dear friend, and I appreciate the comment, and hope we run into each other frequently this coming season.
I'm sure we will, either a football field or a gymnasium or something. So yeah.
I'm ready, man. I'm ready.
Yep. That's those are wonderful words to hear from you. So that's great. So, well, hey, maybe the Cardinals can. I miss the old traditional doubleheaders. I don't like these twi-night things where they clear the place. I always thought after Ernie Banks passed away, and I'm not a Cub fan, but I thought the best tribute they could have made to Ernie Banks was play a traditional doubleheader.
Once a year.
Let's play two.
Yeah.
I mean, if it was against the Cardinals, that would be great, but just against, they could call it the Ernie Banks doubleheader or something, but Bob Costas even mentioned that. That was an idea he had, but I guess there's too much money to be made. Well,
and what a great way that would be to shorten the season, Dave. You can still play 162, but if you throw in a doubleheader once a month, suddenly you've got an extra week.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and then...
But we wouldn't make all that money.
Yeah, and then the World Series might actually always end in October instead of November. That would be terrible.
What a crazy concept!
Us old guys, we have a lot of ideas, but you're not going to listen to us.
Well, the one idea that I had years ago was that any new stadium after the year 2000 should have a retractable roof on it. Major League Baseball should have mandated it. You know, so if you play in the cold weather, you can close the roof. If you're playing, it's raining, you close the roof. You know, the technology was there.
Well, after this April, you probably would have had a lot of teams agree with you.
Yeah. So
you're right.
Anyway.
Well, yeah, and between the start of the season and you get in the postseason, you know, in the northern, even in St. Louis, I can think of that, the World Series against the Tigers, there was crummy weather. You know, it's just, gosh, you just hate to see bad weather affect, the biggest games of the year.
And I speak from my vast experience as the commissioner of the National Stickball League in my backyard, Dave, in my high school days, and I just think it would make the postseason roll just a lot easier for Major League Baseball. So, anyway.
Well, and one last thing, one old man thing about back in my day, you know, I'm you are too, but I'm just old enough. I really remember the 1968 World Series when they played the Tigers, and unfortunately the Cardinals lost. But that was, all the games were still in the daytime, and game one in St. Louis, you know, Gibson had all the strikeouts, and you watch the highlights of that, and he's out there on the mound, you know, last year, he's sweating, you know, and this is the World Series, and he's worked up a sweat because it was a hot October day in St. Louis. And now, you know, you don't see any of that anymore. So we miss a lot of things, I guess. So that's definitely one of them.
I can remember riding my bike home from school and going to the bowling alley because Denny Held's dad, Daisy, used to set up a color TV in the bowling alley, and we would race from school to the bowling alley, save up money and buy a hamburger and watch the rest of the World Series game. And we didn't get the whole thing, but we got the last few innings of it. So
yeah,
those are great memories.
I was about fourth grade that year in 68. I think our teacher, she let me bring a transistor radio, and she would let me turn it on every so often. We would get updates. And then our fifth grade teacher, he was a big baseball guy, and he let us actually watch. It was the amazing Mets. They played Baltimore that year, but he let us watch the World Series. So good times, that's for sure.
Absolutely.
Dave Cain, thank you so much. Had a great time talking to you this morning, and we'll talk to you soon, bud.
Yep. Take care,
Dave. Okay. Hey, thanks a lot, guys.
All right. The great Dave Cain from the Springfield State Journal Register. We need a break. Back in a moment.
Back to Sports Saturday here on WSMI, and we rejoin Tim Mize and Terry Tote.
David Jenkins, thank you so much. And Terry, always
thanks a
great
lot
to talk. Always great to talk to Dave.
Dave's a good friend, and I tell you what, he does such a terrific job of you have sports writers, but then you have sports writers who understand what it means to small schools and little towns with their athletic programs and the legacies and the memories that are made. And he's just a great guy. He gets along with everybody. He can talk to anybody. We were just very, very grateful to have Dave in the area.
Much like you, Terry, where you have the ability to kind of capture the essence of the moment on the radio, when you read one of Dave's articles, you feel like you're there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, if it's a big game, Dave's there.
Absolutely.
That's how you can tell it's a big game. When it's a big game, Dave Kane comes walking in and he does just an absolutely wonderful job. He's classy guy.
I remember a few years ago, it was a girls basketball sectional at Williamsville. And when we got to the championship night, they kind of had all the media stuffed over in a corner. And I told Dave, I said, it doesn't matter that I'm over here, but how are they putting Dave Kane over here?
That's
like,
right.
What is going on?
There's something wrong here. This guy should have a special vest on or something, and, he can go anywhere he needs to go,
He should be perched right at midcourt some sort of reclining sofa. That's what Dave needs.
That's right.
What
that's
Dave
right.
deserves.
Yeah.
But, yeah, what a great guy. And just, like you said, his ability to cover the small schools.
He just really does, and I like the fact that we were able to talk about some of the things in the past with the Armory, the regional tournaments there, and not everybody can relate to that, but those were great days when you would pack up. It was a single class system. You played small schools like Lincolnwood would play big schools. And my golly, when you had a chance to beat one of those big schools, that was just, what a wonderful evening.
It's real easy in today's age with the social media and the technology like it is to kind of get wrapped up and think that nothing happened prior to, 2000.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, a lot happened prior to the year 2000. And it's...
The legacy...
It needs to be remembered.
Yes.
What happened in 1970 or 1960... We're talking just in terms of sports here. Forget about the actual world.
Right.
But just in sports, such and such player, that's the greatest I've ever seen. Well, calm down.
Yeah.
Calm down. Remember the players of the 70s, of the 60s, and remember the fact that Lincolnwood played Southeast.
Yes. Lincolnwood, actually, I was thinking about this, they used to play DeSable of the Chicago Public League. DeSable would would come south for a weekend trip, and DeSabo would stop in and play at Lincolnwood, and a lot of fans probably don't remember that, but I do. And it was probably only a couple of years that it happened, but DeSabo out of the Chicago Public League played, and there was no dunking at that time, but they played above the rim. That was great. That was great basketball there. Didn't bring any cheerleaders, so the Lincolnwood cheerleaders cheered for them.
Cheered for them, really?
During the introductions and everything. And, basically they just brought the basketball team on a bus and played ball. So.
They're ready to go.
Yeah. Those were the days where, the smaller schools would frequently play the larger schools. That's not always the case anymore because the larger schools sometimes don't see the advantage of playing a small school.
Well, there is no value. If you beat them, you're supposed to beat them. And if you lose, then you're just embarrassed.
Yeah.
And, we were talking about Nokomis basketball with Dave. That's what Nokomis does around here that really no other small school does.
Yes.
They play the Taylorvilles.
Yes.
The Granite Cities. The 3A, 4A schools. They'll play anybody, anywhere in that first part of the season. And a lot of times, they take their lumps in the win-loss column.
Sure.
But what do you know? They win 20 games and wind up playing in a sectional every year.
How about that? Isn't that amazing? The consistency in that formula is just unbelievable.
A lot of times, everybody wants to win their 20 games.
Yeah.
And nobody likes to lose. But when your goal is the end of the year, and you realize that at the beginning of the year, you're going to be better off forward. You're going to take some lumps early, but so what? Winning by 40 points in 15 games, that don't help you a lick.
And even going back to this idea of the district in football, Tim, for the playoff situation, you know, when a team can schedule a non-conference game late in the season, as far as preparing for the playoffs, that's a great thing for them. That really is a great thing. And that's, we're out of time.
That's it. What a fast moving hour.
Time flies when you're having fun.
That's
exactly
you. Right. Thanks to Dave Cannon for joining us here this morning on Sports Saturday. Cardinal baseball, a double dip from Wrigley, 11-10 game one, 6-05 game two, both at AM 1540 and FM 106.90. Don't take us home.
Your 50,000 watt sports voice from Mid-Illinois, WSMI FM, Litchfield, Hillsboro, Carlinville, and Greenville, the station you can count on. What a great weather weekend we have. Get out there and enjoy and have a great sporting weekend. We'll be back next week. Same bat time, same bat channel.